Once there was a civilization, much like ours, but with a greater intelligence, greater powers, and a greater capacity for good.
Even though you've been raised as a human being, you are not one of them.
Well, good evening, folks. Welcome to the Light of Day, coming to you live on the Orion Talk Radio Network, Saturday night, September 18th, 2010. Wow, we only got about less, we got October, about three months or so to go, and the year will be all finished. To be quite blunt with you, folks, I've decided that I'm giving this Death Star up until January of 2014 to pass us. If nothing happens by then, I'm getting out of all this alternative research stuff, because it's just, I spend so much time in it, just becomes so incredibly overwhelming. We need more team members out there to help me and John DiNardo out. I mean, we're just constipated constantly with information being bombarded with. We really need more team members in our research here. Anyway, you're listening to Light of Day. This is show number 26. We're live Saturday night, September 18th, 2010. The dew point here in the monsoon-stricken Sonora Desert is hovering around 38 to 39 degrees, and boy, our dew point has sure come down here. It was 62 degrees back on September 8th, and it's been dropping ever since. But I tell you, folks, the sun out there can really be felt on you when you're outside. You can feel the heat coming off that sun. And, well, I noticed this up in Wisconsin, I don't know, maybe about 5 to 10 years ago. I remember being up there, and you can just feel the heat coming off that sun. So I don't know if that's just the way it normally is or not, but just a little side note there. Marshall Masters, one of the premier researchers on the topic of Planet X, was on Vortex Network News this morning. You can go to vortexnetworknews.com to check out the archive. Bill Alec and Aurora Lights show airs every Saturday morning from 10 in the morning up until 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and that's Pacific time. The first hour is by Bill Alec, the progressive, the Vortex Network News Hour. And then the following hour, it's hosted by Bill, Aurora Light. She does the, I'm sorry, I got that all confused. Let's start over. The first hour is Bill Alec, and you know what? I don't have this written down, so just go to the website to find out, okay? 10 to 1. Saturday morning, Pacific time. And you may want to know that Lucas was a guest on their show last weekend. I'm going to have regularly returning co-host slash guest John DiNardo for tonight. We'll be bringing him on at the bottom of this hour. By the way, John DiNardo has a show here on Orion Sunday nights. So I think that's it. I can't remember, but you can go to the Orion website. Just check out the time there. Now, my show here may be changing to a different day and time of the week. I just briefly talked to Jimmy at the network about this today. Because me doing shows here Saturday nights, it just hasn't been working out for me. For one, most of the time I have kids out in my studio here up until the last minute. And, you know, if I want to bring guests on, it could be hours later into the night. It may be way too late for some of my guests. And it just ain't working out. So I'm going to be talking to Jimmy, the CEO here at the network, tomorrow or Monday more about this. But I would like to move the show to a weekday morning where I might come on like 9 or 10 o'clock Pacific time on a weekday morning, because for one thing, if I brought John DiNardo on at that time, he's a lot more awake at that time of the day. Now, this program, folks, is devoted to exposing the inbound passage of the Red Comet of Doom, also known as the Death Star, Nibiru, the Planet of the Crossing, the Destroyer, etc., etc. Has many names. Me and John DiNardo traditionally refer to it as Planet X, but after consulting with Lucas this week, it was suggested we change the name to the Cosmic Event. Because Planet X really isn't a planet, folks. It's in most likelihood, either a T or L class series cold brown dwarf star. I personally believe the name Planet X is perpetuated as a name in order to diminutize its effectualities upon Earth and to make this topic just appear as just some totally ridiculous issue. But Planet X, according to Professor Jim McCanny, means a planet, an astronomical body out there that has not yet been named. It also means the 10th planet. So it has two different meanings. This show is also devoted to exposing the ruling power elite's preparations for this cosmic event, which is an ongoing, recurring, predictable, cyclic event. And folks, if you're prepared, you won't be scared. And there are solutions, and my co-host John DiNardo has a lot of solutions to offer. You know, a lot of times he doesn't have enough time to offer all the solutions, but he does have quite a few of them. One would be strengthening your roofs, I think he said, with copper nails instead of galvanized nails. Another would be putting a car cover over your car and then putting an inflatable raft between the car cover and the car, because we're going to be seeing like 7,500 or 100-pound hailstones coming down before we know it. Another thing would be to consider relocating away from the coastlines. Another would be buying what's called a Tilly hat. It's like it's a hat that'll protect you from high ultraviolet radiation coming from the sun. So there are a number of solutions that John DiNardo does offer. I mean, yeah, the vast majority of the planet could be wiped out, but there are going to be pockets of survival communities out there. And, whatever people do survive, if they're prepared, they won't be scared. They'll be prepared. And, you know, storing up food, that's another thing. Considering relocating to a higher elevation above sea level, that's another one. Getting out of the major population centers is another one. Bill Cooper always warned us about this, folks. We need to get away from the major population centers. And even Jim McCanny has stated that's why there's been such a tremendous effort to contain people within the cities. Is because, well, it speaks for itself. We're coming into a break, folks. We'll be back. You're listening to Light of Day with your host, Sheldon, Dan, and Orion. Saturday night, September 18th. We'll be back. Thank you. folks. Welcome back to the Light of Day with your host, Sheldon Day, coming to you live on Orion, Saturday night, September 18th, 2010. Current dew point here in the monsoon-stricken Sonora Desert, which is finally starting to dry out, is hovering around 38 to 39 degrees. This is show number 26. Now, I have a soundbite here I wanted to play again from that I played last weekend, but the volume level wasn't loud enough. This has to do with NASA finally coming out on reporting on spaceweather.com about all these fireballs that have been hitting Jupiter. So I'm going to pull that up right now, and we'll play that again. So queuing it up as I speak.
Fireballs Light Up Jupiter, presented by Science at NASA. September 9, 2010. In a paper published today in the Astrophysical Journal Letters, a group of professional and amateur astronomers announced that Jupiter is getting hit surprisingly often by small asteroids, lighting up the giant planet's atmosphere with frequent fireballs. The impacts are bright enough to see through backyard telescopes on Earth. Indeed, amateur astronomers were the first to detect them, recording two fireballs in 2010 alone, one on June 3rd and another on August 20th. Professional astronomers at NASA and elsewhere have followed up on the amateur observations, hoping to learn more about the impacting bodies. When it hit Jupiter, the impact released about 1,000 million million joules of energy. Scientists continue to analyze the August 20th fireball, but think it was comparable in scale to the June 3rd event. Before amateurs spotted these fireballs, scientists were unaware collisions so small could be observed. The first hint of their easy visibility came in July 2009, when Anthony Wesley, an amateur astronomer from Australia, discovered a dark spot on Jupiter. It was clearly the swirling debris of an impact event that he had only just missed. Next time, however, his luck would improve. On June 3rd, he caught a fireball in action. I was watching real-time video from my telescope when I saw a 2.5-second-long flash of light near the edge of Jupiter's disk, says Wesley. It was clear to me straight away it had to be an impact event. Another amateur astronomer, Christopher Go of the Philippines, confirmed that the flash also appeared in his recordings. Professional astronomers, alerted by email, quickly looked for signs of the impact in images from larger telescopes, including NASA's Hubble Space Telescope, the European Southern Observatory's Very Large Telescope in Chile, and Gemini Observatory telescopes in Hawaii and South America. Scientists saw no thermal disruptions or typical chemical signatures of debris, which allowed them to put a limit on the size of the object. The second fireball on August 20th was first detected by a Japanese astronomer, Masayuki Takakawa of Kumamoto City, and quickly confirmed by another Japanese astronomer, Aoki Kazu of Tokyo. This one lasted for about 1.5 seconds, and like the June 3rd fireball, left no debris observable by large telescopes. It is interesting to note that while Earth gets smacked by a 10-meter class object about every 10 years on average, it looks as though Jupiter gets hit with the same-sized object as often as a few times each month, comments Don Yeomans, manager of the Near-Earth Object Program Office at JPL, who is not directly involved in the study. Just yesterday, on September 8th, a 10-meter class asteroid named 2010 RF-12 flew past our planet without hitting. A somewhat smaller space rock, 2008 TC3, did hit and burned up in the atmosphere above Sudan 2 years ago. The Jupiter impact rate is still being refined, adds Yeomans, and studies like this one help us do just that. To learn more about the original research, read First Earth-Based Detection of a Super Bolide on Jupiter by R. Hueso et al. In the APJ Letters, 2010, Volume 721, page 129. The story was read by Tony Phillips and presented by Science at NASA. To find more Science at NASA stories on the Internet, please visit science.nasa.gov.
So there's a soundbite, folks. that was taken off of NASA's website post, which was posted on spaceweather.com about a week ago. You can go back in the archives if you still want to download that. Should still be there. I see we had a... I had an email here that came in from Norio Hayakawa. Now, this guy never sends me anything. He lives over in, I believe he lives in Albuquerque, but he wanted me to share with my audience about a a story back from 1991 about what really happened with a helicopter crash near Area 51. And it has to do with Wackenhut Security Corporation's involvement with the Black Projects and a dead journalist named Joseph Casolaro. And Ted Gunderson's in here. It's a pretty long article. You know, it's really strange that all of a sudden I finally get, you know, I send Norio Hayakawa emails all the time, and here he finally sends something before my show starts tonight. He doesn't ever send me anything. This article is, it's just too long to read. I mean, we got to bring John DiNardo on here to talk about these gas pipeline the so-called gas pipeline explosions. What he has to share about what happened in San Bruno, California is pretty interesting. I'm just going to try to talk here up until the next break, because we'll be coming into a break in about 2 minutes or so, and I don't want to cut John off. So be sure to tune in to John Moore's show on Republic Broadcasting tomorrow afternoon. His show starts at 1 p.m. on the Pacific Coast. I have no idea who his guest is for tomorrow. I sent him an email and encouraged him to carry Gilbert Erickson on his show. Gilbert's never been on John Moore's show. Hopefully John will follow up on that for me. And there's also another, we have a listener out there named Mike. Don't know who this guy is, but he told me the September 18th link for my show takes him to a page error, one of them error 404 page things. Well, I wanted to let you know, Mike, I don't put my archives up until after my show is finished. So, you know, I don't know why sometimes people click on, you know, the newest link when it clearly shows in red text in my emails what time my show airs. So, yeah, even though I have those links up, they're not operable links until after the show concludes. So, my show finishes at 11 o'clock tonight, West Coast time, and then it usually takes me about an hour and a half, sometimes 2 hours, to get those archives posted, because I have to edit my show with taking out coughs and long pauses or screw-ups, etc. So it is a very time-consuming process. You know, I usually get to bed about 2 o'clock in the morning, West Coast time. You know, just doing a 2 hour a week show, it's very time consuming. I don't know how some of these guys get by doing a 3 or 4 hour show a day. It's most likely because they have a staff helping them, people like Alex Jones. Well, there's the break. We'll have John DiNardo on the show after the break. You're listening to The Light of Day with your host, Sheldon Day, on Orion. Stay tuned to the show devoted to exposing the unbound passage of the Red Comet of Doom. Folks, welcome back to The Light of Day with your host, Sheldon Day, coming to you live on Orion, Saturday night, September 18th, 2010. Before we bring John DiNardo on here, I have him on hold right now. Just wanted to read a really few quick things here. You know, I don't have time to read all this stuff, but as far as Earth changes go, I got something from Kimberly here yesterday. 109 mile-an-hour winds ripped through New York City. Possible tornado in the New York City area. Separate one from my friend up in Long Lake, Wisconsin. Chinese in Wisconsin, Arizona, and Pennsylvania at the Harley-Davidson plants. I got this one from John DiNardo yesterday. Astrophysicists warn of massive earth changes soon. We got a 6.3 earthquake in Afghanistan. That was sent from Kimberly yesterday. All these images that NASA's SOHO satellite is capturing of Planet X by the sun, I don't necessarily endorse nor refute that. I'm just sharing that with people on my email list for whatever it's worth. I don't believe it is by the sun right now. So that's just a little snapshot of some of the earth changes going on. We're going to bring John on now so he can talk about his major geological alert in because of what happened out there in San Bruno, California, about a week ago. So we're going to bring John on now. Hello, John. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sheldon. I'm happy to be with you. My voice is echoing.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Hang on. Yeah, oh boy. I don't know where that's coming from.
Well, I think you had it last time, and you corrected it.
Yeah, I took the thing out of the back of the digital phone hybrid, like, that normally gets rid of it, but it didn't do it tonight.
Oh.
Can I call you right back?
Sure, okay, I'll
be
right here.
Let me do that, John, hang on. Sorry, folks, we're having technical difficulties here. I'm getting feedback there. I think it's coming from out of the digital hybrid. We're going to try to reconnect with John here. Redialing as I speak.
Hello?
Yeah, are you there, John?
Yeah, still echoing.
It's still echoing.
Is there anything else that you could try?
Yeah, one more thing. Let me plug out the digital hybrid to reset itself, and I'll call you right back again.
Okay.
Okay, thanks. Sorry, technical problems here. I can't figure this out. I'm going to plug out my digital hybrid, and hopefully it'll reset the phone hybrid so I can bring John on board here. This usually takes about 30 seconds to do. I see I got a message here on Skype. Maybe I'll just check that out quick while I'm resetting the... Well, we got a message here from Jimmy at the network. If this doesn't work, I think Jimmy's just going to call John up to bring him on. So I'm going to reset the phone hybrid. Amateur radio at its best from the Light of Day studios in the Sonora Desert. Okay, I got that set. Got that reset. Now I'm going to try to call John again. I don't know if you folks can hear the phone ringing there, but... Hey, John? Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I'm still hearing that. Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I don't...
Well, I could probably live with by taking the earpiece away from my ear and just talking to the phone like this. It's a little bit better that way. If you want to interrupt me, you just have to yell kind of loud because my ear is not to the receiver. Okay.
Yeah, you just want to, I guess you just want to talk until the break, and then we'll have Jimmy call you, and he'll bring you on that way, Doug.
Okay.
Go ahead, Doug.
All right, well, first of all, the San Bruno earthquake, San Bruno explosion, that is, was triggered by an earthquake. I knew it intuitively when it occurred, because I knew, found out that shortly thereafter, after the first news reports came of this tremendous, horrific explosion and fire, I found out that San Bruno is located very close to the San Andreas Fault.
Hey, John?
Hello?
John?
Yeah.
I just gave Jimmy at the network your number. I think it's better to bring you on that way because this information is just way too important because that noise, that feedback sound might be going out on the recording, so...
Okay. I'll hang up now.
I'll just hang you up, and Jimmy in the background, please call John there and bring him on, and maybe you can just play some music for a minute.
Okay.
Okay, thanks, John.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there, folks, but we're going to try to have Jimmy bring him on through the Skype, I guess. Or maybe he'll just play some music for me. I'm really glad Jimmy's in the background there monitoring what's going on, because I cannot seem to rectify this problem. I don't know what is causing it. But anyway, sorry about the technical screw-ups. It's bound to happen when you're trying to expose an Earth, changing event like the topic we cover here. Okay, we got John DiNardo on now. I'm going to go to my Skype and bring him on board that way, I guess. You there, John? Oh, great. Okay, hey, go ahead, John.
Okay, shortly after the news reports came out about the San Bruno explosion, I went to get some of these news reports the day after, and I found out I was trying to pinpoint the exact time that it occurred, that this explosion occurred, and I found out that it was one of the witnesses was at a soccer game, and she said at 6:14 p.m. we were watching a game, and then we saw this huge fireball shoot up in the sky from behind the high school. So I knew it was 6:14, plus or minus a couple minutes, that this explosion occurred. Then I checked the USGS websites, and I came to find that there was an earthquake that occurred right parallel to San Bruno, right on the San Andreas Fault, as close to San Bruno as you could possibly get on the San Andreas Fault. And that distance from the fault and the earthquake on the fault, the distance from the earthquake point on the fault to San Bruno was less than a mile. So I pretty much knew there that this was the cause of it, because here we had coincidence in both time and place between the earthquake and the explosion. So I figured what probably happened was that this earthquake caused enough jarring in the earth, and it doesn't have to be a tremendous concussion in the ground to cause the pipes, dirt and compacted earth to shift. When it does shift, just enough so that dirt beneath the gas main begins to move and create a pocket, a lack of support underneath some particular point in the gas main, then you have thousands, just imagine thousands of tons of earth pressing down on the top of that gas main, with nothing below it to support it, and it's like giving it a karate chop, essentially. You see these karate exhibitions with this huge stack of bricks piled up, and they smash it with their hand. Well, that's what would happen with the gas main.
Hang on to that thought, John. Hey, we'll be back. You're listening to Life of Dan Orion. We're going into our 3-minute break. Stay tuned, folks. Stay tuned, John. Welcome back to the Light of Day with your host, Sheldon Day, coming to you live on Orion Saturday night, September 18th, 2010. This is show number 26 now on Orion. we have John DiNardo on hold. So John, in light of what we've seen in San Bruno, now we're going to also be gradually seeing more of these events, right?
Yes, this is what I'm concerned about. Just to briefly recap the San Bruno explosion, a woman who was interviewed as a result of this, who was a resident of San Bruno, stated that it occurred at 6:14, and this fact was in one of the news reports, and that's how I knew the exact time that it occurred. And I checked around for earthquakes, and I found there was a small earthquake right on the San Andreas Fault, which is the most notorious fault in the United States. San Andreas Fault, and it was right alongside the town of San Bruno. I estimate it to be less than a mile, probably, you know, a half a mile away. And all it takes is a little bit of vibration, a concussion in the ground to cause this shifting. Now, a precursor to this major blast was probably smaller earthquakes that occur all the time along the San Andreas Fault, and what they serve to do is gradually shake the underground compacted dirt, shift it, move it, until it finally becomes displaced. And again, when you displace the support dirt beneath and the gravel, etc., beneath the gas main, then there are tremendous pressures are put on the gas main. And another important fact is that people in the neighborhood, in the San Bruno area, were smelling gas coming from the ground. They were smelling gas, and some of them evidently reported it, but the gas company did nothing. This is criminal. So what had happened was the gas main apparently cracked and was leaking gas. It cracked from previous tremors in the ground. And this was a warning sign that they disregarded, and this led to this horrific explosion. Now, underground, when the pipe finally broke, it's easy to conceive in your mind what this, the mechanism that created the fire. You have a gas main breaking apart, and when it completely separates under great pressure, there's a tremendous striking force between the two pieces of broken gas main. That metal against metal scrapes with tremendous force, and what results is many sparks. Sparks are bound to occur when you have metal scraping against metal. We've all seen sparks occur when you drag a piece of steel forcefully across concrete or asphalt. You can actually see the sparks. So all it took was one of those little sparks to set off the explosion, and it was a horrific explosion. Went straight through the ground, up through the ground, created a huge hole in the ground. And then I saw the photographs. You can see the photographs, on the various newspaper websites and local television station websites. It was a fireball that went up in the air, and it ignited all the houses instantaneously, because everybody's house is connected to the gas line. This is what is so scary. Go ahead.
Oh, I didn't mean to interrupt your train of thought there, but I wanted folks to also know that even though the USGS website shows it as a 1.1, it's really a 2.1, and the real mechanism behind this would be the incoming passage of the destroyer star. And I also wanted folks to know that this is John's first public radio presentation to talk about the San Bruno incident. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I want to say real quickly, people, please, if you're listening, please go to Facebook. And I created a group on Facebook. The name of the group is very simple, easy to remember. No More San Brunos. No More San Brunos. And I'm trying to attract firefighters from across the country to go to this group and help to spread the word. My remedy for the problem, I think, is quite reasonable, and that is they need to put sensors under the ground in all the gas mains, especially those that are near earthquake areas. But not only earthquakes, there's going to be sinkholes too. We're seeing more and more sinkholes occurring underground, even in areas where there are no earthquake fault lines. What this means is that dirt is being displaced, sinking down into cavities below, deeper underground. And we have many cases now of visible sinking earth, where there was a sonic drive-in, a food, fast food drive-in, that actually sunk into the ground recently. The photographs were on the internet. Many, many other photographs we have of highways sinking into the ground. In various places, there's a sinkhole in Guatemala City, the size of a four-way intersection. In fact, the sinkhole is right at a four-way intersection. There's an aerial view of this Guatemala City earth sinkhole. So what happens with a sinkhole is you're going to have massive gas main breaks. You're going to have massive water main breaks. Incidentally, at San Bruno, the water main naturally went out at the same time as the gas main, because the gas main blew and it shattered the water main nearby. So what they need to do is put sensors in underground, sensing the stress, sensing both the stress on the pipe and also the vibrations, any kind of shock.
Hey, John?
Yes.
Well, I seen a Skype message here from Jimmy, the CEO at the network, and he was also wondering about these tornadoes that ripped through New York City.
Well, I've been following the Weather Channel, and actually, I'm probably the only person in the United States who has about 250 hours of severe weather reports that I've been recording from the Weather Channel ever since 2004, since I've been following Planet X from around 2002. And then around 2004, I got this inspiration to do a radio program on specifically devoted to the incoming Planet X. The name of the radio program is Planet X in Bible Prophecy. And in the process of doing this, I started accumulating severe weather reports from the Weather Channel. And tornadoes are becoming so common nowadays. New York City got one, yes, a few days ago. It was the worst. It scared a lot of New Yorkers. It was the worst they had ever seen in their lives. They estimated the winds 80 miles an hour, with possibly gusts up to 100. Many trees were blown down. Now, tornadoes can happen anywhere in the country, although there are some areas that are very much more prone to tornadoes because of their position in the jet stream, and that is in the Midwest. In the Midwest, they've always had tornadoes, even from going from Texas all the way straight up the center of the country, up to North Dakota. But now they could happen anywhere else, although they have historically happened very rarely on the East Coast and very rarely in New York. But now we're going to be seeing them, since they're becoming so common across the country, these tornadoes. We can expect to see more of them anywhere. Doesn't matter, there's no safe area, although the Midwest is still going to get the worst of it. Incidentally, I wish I had recorded the Weather Channel a few days ago. 2 days, I think it was a day or two, before the big New York hurricanes that occurred just recently. A day or two before that, there was a horrible, scary storm around Wichita, Kansas, and that whole region of the country around Wichita. There was hail the size of softballs. Baseball size and softball size hail, and these are are terrible weather, destructive weather anomalies, and I shouldn't even call them anomalies. These are weather events, and if not, they're becoming very common.
We're at the top of the hour break, John. This will be a long 8-minute break, so just sit back and relax. We'll be back, folks. Stay tuned to the light of day.